Roundtable brought to you by Burke Financial, offering homeowners personalized mortgage solutions for approvals in as little as 1 hour and fast funding. Visit burkefinancial.ca, brokerage license number 13111. Joining us, been a minute, Queen's Park reporter for the Globe and Mail, Laura Stone. Hello, Laura.
Hello, how are you guys?
We're excellent. Nice to hear your voice. Aviation expert John Torrey Jr. joins us as well. Always a pleasure, my friend.
Likewise, good to be here.
So you know what? Let's start off with this one, guys, and I'll start off with you, John, having aviation in your background. Some reaction to, obviously, this a land thing as well as is in the air. Some reaction to today's border announcement. Canada will let fully vaccinated American travelers into the country on August the 9th, others internationally on September the 7th. Was this a surprise to this announcement, or did you pretty much see it was coming this way?
I mean, I think everybody thought something was coming because, you know, in addition to the political pressures of it opening the border, it's just time, you know, and it's time to listen to the sciences, look at things like our vaccination numbers and how well we're doing there, and also to pay attention to the fact that, you know, we can't drive an entire tourism economy in Canada entirely domestically. We need people to come in and spend money here. People want to visit their friends and relatives. They want to see their families. They want to go and see things they haven't had a chance to see. So I think that a lot was coming together to say that we would start seeing reasonable, science-based, you know, safe and backed by public health initiative measures to open the borders starting very soon. And I'm happy about today's announcement.
So, Laura, I guess one of the glaring omissions in today's conversation is that this is not a two-way conversation. We're only a couple of days from what could possibly be a renewal of us not being able to go into America. So I'm curious, do you think that they're going to change their mind on this one? Is this an announcement that's been rubber-stamped, but they're going to have to make it? Why do you think there's been no conversation on that side?
Well, I would be surprised if there wasn't talk behind the scenes with the United States to make sure that this was done in coordination. We know that that several U.S. lawmakers have been pushing Canada hard to reopen the border. So I would be shocked, actually, if the U.S. doesn't come out with something similar quickly. But I do think, you know, the timing of this announcement is really interesting with everyone talking about potential federal election getting kicked off at some point in either early or mid-August. That's sort of the rumor mill in Ottawa. And so I think that, as John said, it's a very popular move for travelers, people with family here, Canadians. I think another huge part of today's announcement was the fact that children under 12 no longer have to quarantine for 2 weeks if their parents are fully vaccinated. So that's really mm-hmm. significant to families who are going on holidays or visiting. So I think that this is certainly going to be politically popular for the Liberals, and I would expect the U.S. will have more to say in short order.
We heard today that there were complaints about our Governor General, 460 of them to be exact, essentially saying that, you know, despite the fact that she's Inuit and does want to learn the language of French, she hasn't yet learned it and that we shouldn't have put her there in the first place. Is this an issue for anybody, John?
I mean, I think, you know, you gotta be careful when people just pass these statements saying someone is disqualified for office on that basis alone. I get that it's important to people in Quebec, and it's a long fought battle for them to make sure that their culture is protected. You're also dealing with a governor general who represents, you know, just part of another wide range of communities who are also fighting to see their culture protected after it having been eradicated for, you know, systematically for many years. And she was denied the opportunity to learn French, you know, in school. And I think that that's a big one. You know, when everybody is saying, you know, she doesn't speak French, if she had been given every opportunity to learn the language and sort of turned it down on the basis of saying, well, I just couldn't care less to learn it, that's a very different discussion from someone who is now put into a cultural and political leadership role. And she has said, I'm going to learn it. And so I think we have to give her the benefit of the doubt. Sure, the office can investigate the process and see if there was a flaw or not. But if Ms. Simon is still the desired candidate, then almost by definition, there isn't a flaw in the process. And she's committed to learn the language.
Well, and if you take, Laura, the current Governor General out of this, and this is just an investigation into the nomination process, do you actually think that being bilingual going forward is something that we should insist upon in our next Governor General?
Well, I think something's got to give, right? I mean, we have an extremely unique opportunity here for Canada, an Indigenous person, an Indigenous woman, who is going to work on that very important relationship between the Crown and Indigenous people. And so, you can investigate the process, but it's not like the Prime Minister's office didn't see this coming. It's not like they didn't know that she didn't speak French. And she was asked about that at the initial press conference. But I think that there's kind of a recognition here that in order to make history, you have to broaden things out and maybe make some changes. So I don't know that it should be a requirement if you're getting a unique voice and a unique perspective as Canada is getting with this appointment.
Earlier in the show, a lot of reaction to a story we had about what's going on in California. Because of a budget surplus, they'll be spending just over $6 million to allow all public school students in California to have access to what they are calling a historic free lunch program. And I guess, John, the obvious question would be, obviously we've got, can I say obviously anymore, obviously, we've got Breakfast Clubs of Canada. We do have some great programs when it comes to breakfast. We haven't really had that lunch discussion, but is this something Ontario could maybe say it's worth the cost of trying to do here?
I'm told I say you know as much as you say obviously.
Oh, okay,
so
good. Okay,
yeah, no worries. Absolutely, we should do this. If it's $6 million in California, logic would say it should be $2 million in Ontario. Of course, we'll find a way to make it 12. but even at that number, for sure. And if they're not sure, means test it. I'd be so happy to see the meal program in school. There's so much increasing evidence of the tie-in between nutritional health and gut health and mental health and societal health. Not to mention what it will do for families that really, truly need it. And the reasons that people don't go to school with a lunch sometimes go far beyond the budgetary. This seems like an easy win for an education system, an easy win for whatever government brings it in. We should do this here.
Some people pointing out today, Laura, that, we're in a province that has no problem with the corporate bailout. Why shouldn't we help out kids for lunch?
No, a good point. I mean, I think the term unexpected budget surplus kind of jumps out at me about this story. I mean,
yeah.
I don't know that we have ever heard such a term associated with education. I mean, it's always talk about underfunding and needing more money to spend. But I absolutely agree that this is a huge initiative. And I think that part of the pandemic too, where people were really worried, was a lot of the kids that go to school for the opportunity to eat, or their teachers check up on them, their mental health, they didn't have that. And so I think it was a really scary time for a lot of kids. So I think it would be a great thing to expand, particularly in Toronto, which is an extremely expensive city. And if not all kids would require this, but I'm sure there's a large chunk that would. So I think this would be an extremely popular initiative if it's something that the Ontario government chose to pursue.
So just before you guys joined us, Jay and I were talking a little bit about Matt Damon saying that his daughter won't watch Good Will Hunting because she's worried it might be good.
You know, my 15-year-old refuses to see it. She doesn't want to see any movies that I'm in that she thinks might be good.
What do you mean?
She just likes to give me And my daughter said, yeah, remember that movie you did, The Wall? I said, it was called The Great Wall. She goes, Dad, there's nothing great about that movie.
So she keeps you down to earth,
yeah,
humble.
She keeps me right, my feet firmly on the ground.
So John, you're a pilot. Your kids must love that.
They do. They love that. I mean, I look at this. I reminded my wife, it's yet another thing I have in common with Matt Damon. But for sure, like, they don't care. When I come home and I've had what I think is a really interesting day, I want to talk about it, and they tune out. I think kids generally, it's a bit of that counterculture, and it's part of that kind of generational testing of the fences where they just see what they can say to get a rise out of you. And also, I think it's largely a group of people who would have a sense of humor about themselves that can have that kind of rapport. And my kids for sure will take it out of me whenever they can about work.
Laura, your job's not quite as obvious as John's. Is it hard to explain?
Well, I've got step kids. So I have three step kids who are teenagers now, and they certainly don't think politics is cool. I'll tell you that much. And when I tell them I have to do morning shows at 7 a.m, they're like, what is this? But I think that they're going to start to get a bit more interested as they get older. But, I think it's different when you don't kind of grow up in the household. And I remember growing up, my dad was a movie critic for 20 years, and I I certainly thought that was awesome. Like, I got to go see movies with my dad, go to film festivals, sometimes bump into movie stars if I was kind of shadowing him at the Toronto Film Festival or something. Nice. So I loved that. So that was an awesome, awesome way to grow up. And I certainly didn't downplay it. But yeah, I like to hear that Matt Damon clip because it does kind of keep you humble, right? I mean, even your own kid doesn't think you're that great. And I think that's pretty cool.
My kids still think it was cool that I let them skip school so I could take them to an early premiere of one of the Spider-Man movies. They still literally talk about it. Remember that time, Dad? Remember that time?
No, that's what you remember as a kid. Like, yeah. That's so cool. You know, it's the first opportunity. So, and I'm sure all their friends talked about it too.
Let's finish with this one. I'll get about 30 seconds from both of you. I guess this is the next logical step in what's been a path you could probably predict. Prince Harry has announced that he's writing an accurate and wholly truthful memoir that he says, I'm writing not as a prince that I was born as, but as the man that I have become. Got to think, John, instant New York Times bestseller.
Yeah, probably. And I think a lot of people will read it. And I think a lot of people will be very curious to hear if he's truly disarmingly honest about how he sees the world. I mean, he cannot deny that he's a prince and he still benefits from everything that comes with that. Being a prince in that particular family, which is one of the most powerful in the world. So it'll be interesting to see just what their perspective is and if it's something that's going to have cutting sections to it, like some of their previous public endeavors have, or if it's going to be something that's more earnest about here's how I see the world and here's how I would like to be going forward. I'm curious.
I think this story still has lots of legs. Laura, you?
Oh, I think people are just going to eat it up and love it. I think, the haters are going to hate, but they're certainly a kind of a divisive figure now, especially after the Oprah interview. So I do think obviously people are fascinated by the royal family. They can't get enough of Prince Harry and Meghan Markle's story. So I think that they'll definitely be an audience for this, probably an easy kind of page turner read. And I did see in the article about it that proceeds will be donated to charity. So I actually think that people will be more willing to buy it or shell out the $20 or $30 if they know that it's going to a good cause as well. So I do see instant bestseller in its future.
Excellent point. And I'm glad that you made it. Laura, John, I thank you both for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Deb and I will be back tomorrow afternoon at 2. We'll do it all over again. Deb, great job today. Thanks for hanging out.
It was fun. My pleasure, Jay.
My thanks to the Mics as well. As mentioned, we're back tomorrow afternoon at 2 when the rush continues.